Well, here's something we haven't done for quite a long while, and that's take our portable microphone out into the hall and chat with folks who are passing by on tour here. Here's a 58-year-old lady from Oakland, California.
How did you know that?
Chat with you. Well, I'm a pretty good judge of people, ma'am. And would you tell us?
59 next month.
Wonderful. And what is your line of work?
Well, right now I'm more or less between jobs. I just retired from my job.
Oh, what was that?
I was getting a little too old. I was the lady test pilot, Ray.
Wonderful. Certainly interesting.
I tested the Voodoo jets for the Navy for landing on aircraft carriers.
Oh, I guess that's
This may be of interest to you. This happened to me just last fall.
What if you tell us about it?
Yes, I was coming in for a dead stick landing on the carrier forestall.
Yes.
With the ship was bobbing like a beach ball with very heavy seas.
Heavy seas, uh-huh.
So, as heck, looked no bigger to me than the top of the table here.
I can imagine. Let's move on over here gentleman who's told me he'd like to say a word. Where are you from, sir, and what's your name, Mr. Philip Towser? Philip Towser, where are you from?
What's my name?
I saw your name on that little pin on your lapel there.
Yes, certainly. I'm sorry. I forget what you asked.
Where are you from, and what do you do?
Oh, I'm from Boone Bridge, Massachusetts.
Never heard of that. I thought I knew most of the towns up there, but every now and then you do hear
one. Well, do you know where Stylerville is?
No, I don't. There's a second one I don't know where.
Well, you know where Heck Haven is?
No, never heard of that. Now, that's peculiar. I'd better brush up on that. What do you do, sir?
I'm an old yoke fire.
Is that so? You collect them for putting them together in some kind of a thesaurus, are you?
Well, it depends on whether...
We have a lot of those, of course. Ray and I have collected those for some time.
Well, I'll pay $50 a piece and up.
$50?
Absolutely.
Well,
sure.
How about this one? The fellow goes into a hat shop, and the clerk says, "What can I do for you?" And the fellow says, "I want a hat." And the clerk says, "Fedora." And the guy says, "No, for me."
Wait a minute.
Ray told me that one just before I came out.
Wait a second. I don't think you understand me. I said I buy old...
You hear about that fellow named Shortcake who married an Indian squaw, and when he died...
Yeah.
Strawberry shortcake. Talk about old jokes, boy.
Did you hear about the fella who went to Las Vegas in an $8,000 Rolls Royce? Came home in a $45,000 bus.
No. What about him?
Well, that is the joke.
Oh, I see.
Pierre, the music is stopped.
Very good. Well, I think our time is just about stopped, too, but...
You misunderstood me. I buy old ox yokes anyway.
Yokes?
Off, yes. Kind of thing.
Oh, for antiques? You mean that kind of thing?
Yes.
Well, very nice to talk
to
you.
Whatever happened to that dead stick landing?
And
well,
our time is up, so back inside.
Wally Ballou is standing by now with a Bob and Ray microphone at the Summer Garden Theater, which is the scene of the opening of a much-ballyhooed film called The Really Great Story, which has a star-studded cast. Wally Ballou is standing by there now, so come in, please.
Wally Ballou outside the Summer Garden Theater at our broadcast vantage point, where all of the stars of this motion picture, The Really Great Story, are expected to be passing in just a few moments. And we'll get a few words from them, if we can, as they make their way into the crowded lobby here for the premiere of this film. While we're waiting for the first of the stars to arrive, I would like to chat with the gentleman who has seen many premiere of this sort. He is an usher, Anthony Nostrum. I wonder, Anthony, in the time we're waiting here, if you could just chat with me a little bit and kind of fill in time, in as much as I don't have any local color particular to say.
Well, Mr. Ballou...
Wait just a minute, Anthony.
Yes.
There was a star, the first star, I think, just came in. It might have been Charlton Heston. I'm not sure.
I went to ushering
Back
school.
Back to you, Anthony Nostrum.
Yes. I went to ushering school in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Used my GI Bill right on that.
And how long did it take before you graduated, Anthony?
Well, they had an accelerated course for we fellas, that is, we vets at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Well, and it covered almost everything.
But it was a full day, and
just passed by
to,
go ahead,
in with a lot of homework and everything. But we had graduation 3 weeks later.
Excuse me just a minute, Anthony. I just want to look around
two.
And be sure no other stars creeping up on me.
Another
that I'll
class
bet.
Of 15
yeah, just a minute.
Who didn't graduate? Which is pretty good. I
no,
think.
Nobody coming
so,
down.
I mean, I don't know what the percentage would be.
I missed that one.
It's fine.
I think it was Robert Preston, ladies and gentlemen, just
passed. Has its happy moments and there are the sad moments. For instance, when somebody comes to you and says that they lost their glasses, I mean, that's sad.
Uh-huh.
And a little while later, a fella comes by and he'll say, I found these glasses. And that makes you happy. So it's a little give and take in the ushering.
That was probably Dean Martin who just passed us, ladies. Or else Frank Sinatra.
It's always
sure.
A real wonderful feeling for an usher to give a person a nice
I can
speak,
imagine.
You know?
I can imagine there's gratification there.
Yes, there is. It's a sense of fulfillment. On the other hand, it's a dreadful feeling when you know you're putting somebody in a
who
bad
who was that, the engineer?
And you know,
just a minute, that. The engineer thinks
the,
it was Yves Montand and Simone Signoret, but he isn't quite sure. They've already passed our vantage point. Anyway, and I think our time is just about up until something more exciting happens here at the Summer Garden
cut
Theater.
It out,
Wally
up.
Ballou,
thank you.
Attorney.
Wally Ballou over there, covering the opening of the really great story, and a really great reporting story by Wally.
Now for Sea Search, the stirring adventures of freelance skin diver Lloyd Bricker and his diving partner Lance Spears. Today's episode, titled Perforated Eardrums, takes place near their home base, Catalina Island.
Well, it's hustle aboard the skiff, Lance. We've got three other jobs just like this today in different parts of the harbor.
Yeah, there's been a rash of these things lately. Seems like the only kind of assignment we get.
You think a guy who spends $500 to $600 for a new outboard motor would learn how to fasten it on his boat properly?
Yeah, you'd think so. They no sooner get away from the pier than the thing shakes off, sinks to the bottom, and we got a fish for it.
Where did the guy say that first one fell off?
Well, he didn't say exactly, Lloyd. Just out near the middle somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Middle of what? The harbor, the bay, the ocean, or what?
I think he said the bay. Said he marked the spot by pouring some oil on the water, like in the submarine pictures.
Well, that'll be a big help. This bay is full of oil slicks, and with the current, it's probably moved some.
We're near the middle. Why don't we try around here? You never know.
Okay. Good luck, fella, and... You see a shark down there, belt him on the snout with a heavy, blunt object.
Well, it's not my turn. I found the last five of these things, and you never even got your toes wet.
Well, never mind the arguing. We've got a busy day ahead, Lance.
Oh, boy, I knew you were going to pull this the minute you showed up on board in your business suit.
This suit helps me make a good impression when I work for freelance diving assignments.
Well, it hasn't helped because I land most of the jobs wearing a T-shirt. How can you expect to get diving work hanging around the track? You got to cover the waterfront.
Look, I cover the waterfront, but that's beside the point. You know, I can't dive in water deeper than 12 feet. The pressure against my perforated eardrums could give me a permanently waterlogged brain, the doctor said.
Oh, you've had that for a long time. If you're a real guy, you'd buy a pair of earplugs. Maybe you're afraid you'd have to dive.
Now, that's not true. You know I've tried to buy them, but they never have them for my size ears.
Well, a pair of sink stoppers would do the job, but you're too particular.
All right, get off my back, will you, buddy? Look, I'll dive on the next job. Now, you know my word is good.
As good as an empty aqualung. Hey, that reminds me, did you remember to put air in the lungs today?
Gee, no, I thought you were going to do it. Boy, is this caper turning into a fiasco. If you were any kind of a guy, you'd dive holding your breath.
You know that if I hold my breath, I get heartburn. That's just like swimming after a big meal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I say if a guy's stupid enough to drop his outboard motor in the drink, it's his tough luck.
That's what I say. Let's split. Tune in next time for another exciting Sea Search story entitled Cockles, Mussels, Alive, Alive-O. When you'll hear Lloyd Bricker say...
Now, listen, Lance. I only said my word is good, not great.
On Sea Search, an El Cuco production.
This year, quiz shows, having laid low for a while, are starting to make a careful resurgence in TV. One of the most popular new ones is Interrogation. Now, after weeks of cutting red tape, we've managed to get its producer here for an interview, and he's requested that we use the pseudonym Colonel Whipple in our chat. Why is that, Colonel?
Well, it was always a dear friend of mine, Colonel Whipple, many years ago.
I mean, why don't you want to use your real name?
Oh, well, if I were to give my real name, people would think I was in this for personal gain, and we'll go to any length to ensure the honesty of our show.
All right, well, now will you tell us about the show and how you do keep it on the up and up?
Format-wise, it's just questions and answers. But it's in the policing that things get complicated.
Yeah, I've heard it said that you even have a security chief. Is that right?
That's correct. He's in charge of security for the entire setup. Every member of our staff goes through a checkup dating back to his youth. Anyone who doesn't conform to our rigid standards is dropped as a... they send for the 87 form, fill it out, they have it notarized, and send it back. If it passes, the person is invited to come to the show alone.
Well, how many are so selected for each show?
About 500, Mr. Elliott, which are then boiled down to three contestants by a highly secret method just prior to airtime.
And then they wait in the wings until they're on, Colonel?
Only the first contestant waits in the wings. The other two are held in solitary confinement rooms, cells, and kept under surveillance through a slit in the door.
Well, now, how does the game start?
All right, the MC is led out blindfolded, and so is the contestant. There's no chatting or handshaking. This dispels any suspicion of collaboration between the two. The MC's first words are, question number one, please.
And that, of course, arrives under armed guard in a sealed envelope.
Correct.
Well, by now, I imagine the studio audience is pretty well excited, huh?
Well, the best way to avoid audience help is not to have one. We work in a near vacuum.
Well, we don't have time for too much more, Colonel, but we would like to know what the prizes are that justify such stringent requirements on Interrogation.
Well, the prizes are not very much. A carton of cigarettes, a case of beer, a box of candy.
Small
like
prizes
that.
For so much effort?
We've found that valuable prizes tend to corrupt both the givers and the receivers.
Hmm.
You don't get too many people staking their reputation on a free tank full of regular gas.
Well, I'll agree with you there, Colonel Whipple. Or whatever your name is.
He was a dear friend of mine.
Thanks for coming here to tell us about your impeccably honest quiz show, Interrogation. We wish it long life.
Doesn't matter to me. You see, my month is up, and I'm being rotated out of there tomorrow. As a matter of fact, I've got to hurry back to the office and burn my files. See you around.
Here with us today, and rather unexpectedly, too.
Is my microphone?
Yes, it is, Mr. Watney. We have to revise our log here a little bit because he has got to leave right away. Is Mr. Clyde R. Watney, the regional Eastern Interbureau Coordinator of Administrative Activities for the Northeast States. And Clyde, Hap, you don't mind if I call you Hap. It's nice to see you back here again.
No, indeed, I do not. First of all, I want to thank you and your employers for making this expensive radio time free to me in my office.
Hap, it's been some 6 months since you were here last, and I imagine your field representatives have sent in a good many reports since we talked to you.
Well,
how do things shape up?
Things are shaping up very well, Bob. Of course, the summertime is very difficult for my field men because so many people are not home when we call at their front door to help coordinate the inter-bureau coordinating activities.
I almost anticipated that that would be your problem. However, during the winter, you must have arrived at some...
During the winter, important... our problems, of course, are snow and rough traveling, walking, and driving conditions. Actually, we find that in the early and late fall probably are the nicest times, or in the spring of the year, to contact the people that we must contact in order to fulfill our duties as inter-bureau coordinators in the
Bureau. Well, what does the latest Bureau consensus seem to point to? In other words, what, according to your last survey, shapes up as the thing to look for this summer?
Well, the drafts that we're making now, of course, all have to be put onto paper. They have to be summarized, cataloged, and then sent off to Washington, where they made a permanent record of our office of inter-bureau coordinating.
Well, prior to collating, I imagine that you see personally all of these various reports, don't you?
It's my responsibility as the manager of my particular division. Incidentally, I have the New England states, New York, New Jersey, and Indiana.
Still, mm-hmm.
And it is my responsibility to check and to make sure that all figures are accurate, correct, and in proper form before they're forwarded to my immediate supervisor at the Interbureau Coordinating Office in Washington.
Pentagon, is your office headquarters still at Barre, Vermont?
That's right. And I'm very pleased to say that we have four desks in there now.
Wonderful.
I've gone ahead and hired two more girls. And
how many does that make in a total staff that you have?
Well, the two girls.
I see. And have the telephones been installed yet? I remember you were having
trouble
with that.
No, we're still having a little difficulty with that. We have a party line there now.
Uh-huh. Well, that should make it a little bit difficult to...
I'm trying to bring the government... or rather have the government take a firm hand so that
I
we
see.
Can get a private line. And as much.
Well, now, to sum it all up in a word, Hap, and that's about all the time we'll have is for a word, how would you say the outlook looks?
I'd say the outlook, generally speaking...
Is what?
Is going to be good.
All right, thank you very much. Clyde L. Hap Watney, Regional Interbureau Administrator of the Coordination Division.
And I want to thank your employers...
Quite all right, we're
...for
happy.
Making this time available in
very
my office.
Glad.
We really appreciate it.
Look for you again, Hap.
Well, it's been a long time since we've checked on our private weather forecaster stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire. Speaking of the good Cliff Fleming. So why don't we call him in now and see how things are going. So come in, please, Cliff, atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Bob and Ray in New York calling Cliff Fleming at the Bob and Ray Weather Station, Mount Washington, New Hampshire.
Well, let me try it. This is Bob and Ray at New York calling in Cliff Fleming atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
This is valuable time that we're wasting here, and unfortunately we didn't know that our lines were in such...
I don't know why it is always whenever we're trying to call in somebody. We always run into this difficulty. Now, they can go to Washington, they can go out to Las Vegas, they can go any place at all, and it always happens...
No, Dave, as you know, summer arrived here at Mount Washington, as it did in most other places, bringing with it some rather cold weather. On Monday, we had a temperature of 26 degrees and a frost in some northern portions of New England, Dave. However, yes, Dave.
Cliff, are you broadcasting from the Weather Bureau atop Mount Washington?
That's right, the Bob and Ray Weather Station, Dave.
Well,
Miss Fleming wanted me to tell you how sorry she was. She couldn't be here to chat with you as she sometimes has.
Well, Cliff, the reason I asked...
Yes, Dave.
It seems to me that you're standing beside a busy highway.
Oh, no. Can you hear that, Dave?
Yes,
that's
very good.
That's an acoustical phenomenon, Dave. Those cars you're hearing are some 4 or 5 miles down the mountain.
Is that so?
That's right, Dave. They're traveling along Route 18, but due to the clearness of the air and the acoustical phenomena connected with it, Dave, we get the sound of the cars as if they're going right by the weather station.
What do you know about that?
What's that, Dave?
Hey, what do you know about that?
Nothing except it's an acoustical phenomena, Dave. The clearness of the air or something like that. It's a mirage, Dave.
Uh-huh.
They sound as if they're right on top of her. And wait a minute, Dave. There was one. There
sounded
is one.
Like one was very close there.
I think one went through the kit. Those cars, Dave, aren't as far away as I thought they were.
They're right there.
There's no acoustical phenomena connected with this whatsoever, Dave.
It probably is a detour or something.
Must be something like that. Well, they're getting a little closer, Dave. I think I'd better send it back to you in New York. Happy weather.
You've been listening to Clifford Fleming, Bob and Ray's weather forecaster, stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
It's a dangerous speed to keep on up there, isn't it?
Wally Ballou today is covering a great event that we thought would be very interesting to most of you people, and that is the now famous submarine races held along the eastern shoreboard up there somewhere around Maine. But Wally will tell us exactly, so if you'd come in, please, Wally Ballou.
This is New York calling Wally Ballou along the coast of Maine, please. Come in, Wally.
This, of course, is regatta time all over the country, and this is something a little bit different, I think.
Second bot.
Yeah.
I thought he was coming in. Go ahead. Let's try it once more.
Ballou, off Bass Bay, where in just a moment you'll hear the starting signal, the throwing of a rock into the river, which signifies the start of the submarine race. They'll race from the point where we're standing to some half a mile up the beach, and where Artie Schermerhorn is standing by with his portable microphone. Now one of the officials is ready to drop the rock. And in a moment, you'll hear the rock drop, and the submarines will submerge as this crowd of some 1,400 people. There goes, and there they go under. They've submerged, and you'll hear the cheers. They start on their way. They're both now completely submerged and heading for the finish line, a race against time. Here's one of the spectators standing over here. How do you like so far the race today, sir?
This is a lousy spectator sport. I paid $1.10, including tax, to sit in the grandstand. And all I do is go out of the water. I see them starting, and that's the end.
Well, how else is a submarine going to race, anyway?
Well, they could race on the top, couldn't they?
Well, that would prove the true prowess of the submarine under actual conditions.
Well, I think it's a miserable spectator sport.
Now, down at the other end of the finish line, Artie Schermerhorn, my broadcasting partner, and his portable microphone.
Schermerhorn here at the other end of the line, where just a few moments we expect one of the two submarines to cross the finish line first. It's very hard for me to determine from my particular vantage point just who is in the lead at this moment.
Can you see anything, Artie? Hello, Artie.
Take Schermerhorn back. Don't interrupt me, please, Wally. You ruined the fun of my...
Well, I was wondering if you could see anything from where you're standing.
I was just saying, it's very difficult for me to see anything from where I'm standing. The water, I would estimate, here is probably 30 feet deep, and just enough for the submarines to... I might point out, too, that the tide is coming in. When I first went on the air, I was on what appeared to be dry land. I'm now in water halfway up my legs. However, I shall stay here until...
Hello, Artie. Sorry to cut in here. I hear a mighty cheer going up from the crowd along the bank, so they must have seen something. I think periscopes are up, and we should have a winner at any minute now. Can you see him?
Tide is running very high now. I only hope you can hear me. It's up to my shoulders, and as I understand, along this particular part of the Atlantic Ocean, this particular shore, they have some very high tides. But I'm going to try to get out of here now.
For sure. Artie Schermerhorn seems unable to announce the winner, and since we can't see it from here, we'll return you to New York.
Well, we're getting our signal now from the producer inside, which means that Wally Ballou is all set at Albany, Oregon, for a broadcast from the log rolling contest out there. So come in, please, Wally Ballou. Well, what did that signal mean, then? Is it time for Wally Ballou? All right. Now to...
Hello.
Now, why does this happen always to us when all these other people can...
I don't know. They can go on remotes.
Hold it, Bob.
Yeah.
Just go ahead. We take you now to Albany, Oregon, where Wally...
Wally Ballou here in Albany, Oregon, where the great national log rolling contest is under full swing. I think... Well, there goes one now. We haven't as yet had an interview with a gentleman whose chances seem to be very good. Your name is Pierre, is that right?
That's right, there, Pierre, the half-breed.
And, Pierre, I understand that you hold some sort of a championship for...
I would stay on top of the log there along this.
How long was that?
Well, I was about, I don't know that. I was about, I would stay on there about a day there once.
Well, what happens now to find a winner? These fellows just keep rolling logs all day until they all fall off but one?
What's that?
Let me put it a little more plainly, Pierre.
You stay on the log until you fall off, right?
You stay on the log there until you go by the finish line on it there. You was trying to move your log.
Oh, I see.
Stay on top and not go in the water.
I see.
If you was to get your feet wet, that's okay, though. But you get your shoulder wet, there means you fall down on it.
You can't get your feet wet, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the rules. Your feet can't be wet, but your shoulder can.
Well, if your shoulder gets wet on it, there...
Then you're already in.
There would be that you've fallen over.
What do you do for training for this kind of work, Pierre?
You train on top logs, What else you seeing, I mean?
Yeah,
how else can you train there? You've got to practice on top of the log and... With
okay,
the water,
well,
the cascade was run by there.
Now you're going to put your log in the water and start out, is that right? And they'll time you from the time you start.
That's right there. They put the log on top of the water, and then I would step on it and keep it spinning.
Oh, Pierre has put the log into the water here at the side of the river. How deep is the water there, Pierre?
The water here is so deep there, it's about 2 feet on it.
2 feet?
It would go out and come very deep, though. You go way out there with... On top of the head.
I understand, Pierre. Now, how do you go about getting out of the log? By
you
that
step
I mean,
on there.
How do you depart?
I was using these hobnail boots there. It was gripped the bark on it.
All right, now you're going to get on it, right?
I'm on it now.
Oh, he's standing on it now.
Now I'm spinning.
Now the log starts.
The log on top of me.
And there he goes down the river.
He's disqualified.
He's disqualified. The champion is disqualified. And now this is Wally Ballou returning you.
Ray has taken a mobile unit out to an observatory close by to New York for a chat with Wilbur Feely, astronomer, who will give us some of the sky-watching tips for this month. And if you can hear me, Ray, come in.
I can't hear you very well, so I'm going to start right now. According to my watch, it should be just about the time to go on. Bob, I have Wilbur Feely here, who's going to tell us a little something about the stars in the heavens during
well,
the summer season.
Hello, Wilbur.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Wilbur, tell us, just what can we look for in the skies in the ensuing few weeks?
Ray, Mercury is speeding away from us on its trip to the far side of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Superior conjunction.
I'll be a monkey's uncle.
What's that?
I see.
Now, for the first few days of this month, it will be low over the horizon to the north of east as the dawn brightens.
What is this, Mercury?
Mercury.
Now, how can we spot Mercury,
Let's turn our attention now to Venus, which becomes a brilliant morning star, very conspicuous north of east about 5 a.m. after the 15th of July and reaching greatest brilliance at month's end.
Uh-huh. Well, how can we tell Venus, say...
Mars now becomes the most fascinating object in the sky, and most of this issue is devoted to it, which I'm reading from.
What's that, Wilbur?
A map on page 2.
Well,
and articles on other...
Well, you see, that's not doing any good for radio.
Jupiter.
Wilbur...
Jupiter is still brilliant in the western sky
sure
as the
is.
Evening dusk deepens, but it's seen constantly lower and leaves our night sky early next month.
Uh-huh.
That's about the picture as I see it now.
Well, Wilbur, this is radio, and you're referring us to a map doesn't help us at all. I was asking you how we could tell Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn.
Ray,
from...
here's an interesting fact. Did you know that on the 4th of July at 9 p.m., the Earth reaches an aphelion, its greatest distance from the sun?
On the 4th of July?
Yes, and we were closest to the sun last January, 91 million miles.
Well, how do you
account? And some odd.
How do you, well, I'd say some of them are, but how could you account for the fact that it's warm then, Wilbur, in the summer, and cold in the...
Because it's summertime.
I'm afraid I can't conduct this interview. Heck with this.